People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Redevelopment agencies have given California cities a mechanism for subsidizing private development while boosting the local economy. Since the agencies were axed by the governor's budget last year, and since the state Supreme Court both upheld their elimination and struck down a compromise that would have allowed them to survive in a somewhat watered-down form, all sorts of questions are raised. What we do know is that this court decision is the worst possible outcome for affordable housing, because 20% of redevelopment funding, nearly $1 billion a year, was dedicated to affordable housing production in 400 jurisdictions throughout the state. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast from Eden Housing, we will unravel some of the situation with the help of Lynn Hutchins, partner in the leading redevelopment law firm of Goldfarb and Lipman. Questions like why the governor felt that redevelopment agencies had to go, what the court ruling actually said and what that means, and what can be done at this point to try to preserve some of these funds. Lynn, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So we're looking at a deadline of February 1st for California's redevelopment agencies to begin dissolution. And we know that there are a number of 11th hour efforts to either prolong the agency's lives or replace them with some other way to encourage green growth. Before I ask you to speculate on how all of this will unfold, Lynn, let's talk about the court's ruling on the two bills. Now, as I understand it, they upheld AB 26 and struck down AB 27.
That's completely correct. What the court decided is that the legislature has the right to create redevelopment agencies, and therefore it has the right to dissolve them. And nothing in the California Constitution prohibited that, including Proposition 22, which was passed by the voters of California in November of 2010, and basically prohibits the state from redirecting property tax revenues from redevelopment uses to other state uses. However, that same proposition is the proposition that the court used to find that AB 27, which was the bill that allowed redevelopment agencies to continue if they made payments to the state, could not pass constitutional muster, because the actual pay-to-stay-alive provisions of AB 27 were not truly voluntary payments if you had to make the payments to stay alive, so to speak. So for that reason, they held it was unconstitutional, violation of both Prop 22 and some other constitutional provisions. So the end result is that redevelopment agencies must dissolve by February 1st of this year.
So who benefits from this decision? Not the cities, and certainly not affordable housing development.
Yes. Well, some would say the governor, since this was ultimately his proposal. And others say that financially, the schools and other local jurisdictions that receive property tax revenues from property tax dollars will eventually receive more funding through this property tax funding mechanism, and therefore they will benefit in the long run.
So now, how does eliminating redevelopment agencies actually help the state to solve the budget crisis?
Redevelopment agencies actually do not have the power to levy a property tax. What happens is the property tax is levied. It's about 1% of the value of the property. And then the funds are collected by the county, and then they're distributed to various jurisdictions within specified areas of the community. And the agencies that receive those property tax dollars are typically redevelopment agencies, cities, counties, schools, and special districts. So if you can imagine that this pot of money is a pie, what this bill does, the Dissolution Act, AB 26, is basically say that redevelopment agencies, you're out of business. What we're going to do now with this money is pay off any debts and obligations that you've incurred, and the rest of the money is now going to get distributed to other taxing entities. So what in effect is happening probably more over time is the slice that redevelopment agencies get of the pie is going to reduce, and particularly more over time, and the slice that the other taxing agencies get will get larger. There's the same number of eaters of the pie, so to speak, but it's just that their respective shares will change. How that actually impacts the state is that although the funds do not flow directly to the state, for state budget uses, I understand it that the state believes there are two principal ways in which the state budget will benefit. First, if the amount of funding a school district receives from these local property tax dollars increases, then the state can reduce the amount of payments it needs to make to that school district to meet its Proposition 98 guaranteed funding limits. But that applies for this fiscal year only, the way the bill is written. And then the additional dollars that flow to the cities and the counties will offset some of the responsibilities that the state is pushing down to the local level. For instance, there's been a lot of press lately about lower-risk prisoners transferring to county rather than state facilities. So that pass-through or that increase in funding to the counties is supposed to alleviate some of the new obligation they have to house those prisoners, for instance.
So now that the court has ruled, is there any hope of saving redevelopment agencies?
Well, since the deadline is February 1st, I think the hope is pretty slight now that they may be reenacted. There was a bill being sponsored to extend the date for elimination, primarily to deal with some of the logistics, because the court basically took a period that would have been a 3-month period to dissolve and compressed it into a 1-month period. And so folks have been scrambling quite a bit. The other thought was that with that extension bill, maybe there'd be time to start a new type of redevelopment or community development program. But at this point, I don't think many people have much hope, although you never know with legislation.
So assuming that no extension is provided and the agencies go out of business on February 1st, who takes over their work? How do cities proceed?
Well, first of all, the work disappears at some level. What happens is there are two mechanisms in place. And I say two because the way the non-affordable housing work is handled is a bit different than the way affordable housing work is carried out. So I want to distinguish that. So on the non-housing side, what happens is the cities and counties that actually formed the redevelopment agencies will act as what is called successor agency to the redevelopment agencies, unless those cities or counties elected to not do that by January 13th. And one of the big name players that elected not to do that was actually the city of Los Angeles. But for the most part, cities and counties are electing to wind down their agency. And then what the successor agency is charged with doing is paying what are called enforceable obligations, binding commitments that the redevelopment agency had entered into already, and then winding down the assets, for instance, selling assets and using the money in designated ways, such as it being distributed as property taxes to the schools and the cities and the counties. On the housing side, again, there's a choice that the city makes. The city chooses if it wants to serve as the housing successor to the housing obligations and functions of the redevelopment agency. And if it chooses not to do so, then the local housing authority that has jurisdiction would do so. And if there is no housing authority that has jurisdiction, task would fall to the State Department of Housing and Community Development, known as HCD.
So is it conceivable that some projects that are in progress will proceed and others won't?
Absolutely. The enforceable obligations that are ongoing are items, for instance, if there was a construction contract to build some public improvement that was entered into a year and a half ago with a private party and is close to completion, that will absolutely continue. There's really no authority to impair that contract. But for contracts where the agency may have committed or better yet, maybe they'd entered into design work, so they've gotten design done for a particular public improvement, but they haven't let the construction contract yet. It's unlikely that those sorts of projects would continue yet because there's not a binding agreement for those particular projects. So it's going to be somewhat of a case-by-case determination, agreement by agreement, whether those projects can continue or not.
And what about the assets of redevelopment agencies? Will those have to be sold? And if so, how?
Well, the law requires the liquidation of redevelopment assets, including properties. What happens is the successor agency is charged with selling off those properties as fast as possible, but also at maximum value. And the successor agency serves at the direction of a new, and I'm not even going to call it an entity, but of something new called an oversight board, which is a board made up of representatives of the affected taxing agencies, such as schools, the county, as well as some redevelopment agency representatives that actually oversees what the successor agency is doing. So, for instance, the oversight board might direct that the redevelopment agency should sell XYZ property because they think it's the right time to sell that particular property. Or they may say, gee, the market looks pretty bad right now, which it probably does in most jurisdictions in California. Maybe we should wait and see before we sell it. And again, that's going to be very much a case-by-case determination. No one really knows exactly how that's going to work yet. That's kind of one of the unknown features of this bill that's going to unfold, particularly in the next few months, exactly how this is all going to work. I will say for affordable housing properties, and by that I mean properties that were purchased with the affordable housing funds of the redevelopment agencies, those are treated differently. Those transfer to the successor housing entity, and I'm going to just use the word city here for purposes of ease. And the city then is supposed to use that property for affordable housing purposes. So it may choose to sell that property to an affordable housing developer in order to develop low and moderate income housing, or it may choose to sell the property and use the proceeds of that sale to generate funds to subsidize affordable housing development in its community. We believe, although this isn't crystal clear in the legislation, that the oversight board actually does not have any oversight authority over the housing assets. And so the housing successor can basically negotiate and make those determinations as it's always done as a redevelopment agency, but in this context as a city or a housing authority instead.
So State Senator Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg is sponsoring SB 654 that will protect the existing housing funds. How would that work?
Well, currently the bill is a little bit inconsistent in the treatment of existing housing funds. And as you mentioned, 20% of the tax increment that redevelopment agencies received were placed in these housing funds. And in three places in the legislation, it says that the housing funds that are unencumbered are to be sent to the state controller for distribution as property tax revenue to the other affected taxing agencies. And in one place, it says the housing funds stay with the housing successor entity. And one of the major things that SB 654 would do is clarify that the housing funds actually stay with the housing successor for use as affordable housing in those communities.
It is a monumental undertaking to shut down and unwind all of these agencies. Did the legislature anticipate how this would happen in the law? Are there any fixes that'll be needed to make this all work smoothly?
Well, I think the way I like to look at it is that the legislation has kind of a macro view of how the dissolution process might work. It's somewhat like a bankruptcy proceeding. Here are all the assets, here are all the debts, let's sell the things, let's settle everything up. But for those of us that are actually in the weeds trying to implement it, we're finding that there are a number of issues that we're frankly using our best judgment to resolve since it's not clear in the legislation. For instance, I just mentioned whether the oversight board has any oversight role over housing assets. That's not 100% clear in the legislation. the inconsistency with the use of the existing housing funds that are unencumbered, again, is inconsistent in the legislation. And again, that's something that this legislation, SB 654, would attempt to fix. Exactly what housing obligations are transferred to a housing successor isn't particularly clear. There's certainly a number of contractual ones that clearly will transfer to the housing successor, but the redevelopment agencies had at least three statutory affordable housing obligations, and it's not particularly clear if those transfer to the successor housing entity. And there's certainly debate in the affordable housing community and the redevelopment community as to exactly how that's going to work. So clarification on that would certainly be helpful. However, except for SB 654, the smoke signals or the capital at the moment are indicating that there's no need for cleanup. So I'm certainly not holding my breath for cleanup legislation. I will say that there are actually a number of technical committees from across the state working on various implementation issues, and many have suggested some recommended practices to address some of the lack of clarity in the dissolution bill. For instance, the County Property Tax Managers Group has issued a set of guidelines about how certain things need to be accounted for. And although these practice suggestions are not binding, I think that some of these problems are actually going to be worked through on an administrative level and with some practical suggestions. Although some of the issues, quite frankly, think might end up in litigation. In fact, there's been two court cases filed since the Supreme Court decision came out.
So, Lynn, redevelopment agencies also had specific tools that they could use to help make development happen. One of those was the Polanco Act, which helped provide liability protection on the cleanup and reuse of environmentally contaminated sites. What happens in those kinds of situations?
Well, again, it's not completely clear in the legislation, but we believe the Oversight Board has less authority to oversee the activities of the housing successor to the redevelopment agency. And therefore, we believe that for those particular properties, to the extent they have remediation issues, that those housing successors should be able to use the provisions of the Polanco Act, both to clean up the properties and get liability protection for those properties and pass that on to future developers of those properties. But again, that would be in the affordable housing context.
So what happens next in the long term? How will the localities be able to carry out redevelopment projects? These programs have been really important for revitalizing many California communities. Does the state have any sort of plan to help the cities replace this tool?
Well, that's certainly the billion-dollar question. We certainly are not aware of any proposals at the moment that are very concrete. The one replacement program that folks were discussing quite a bit last year was a mechanism called the Infrastructure Financing District. And that's a program that's actually been around in California for about 20 years. And in all that time, there's only been about two or three that have ever been activated. That's because it's very difficult to use and they don't generate nearly the amount of funding. And they're very difficult to use, so folks felt that they're not a very effective replacement for redevelopment. Now that redevelopment is basically gone, I have a feeling people will be looking at those with greater interest and seeing if there isn't a way to use them effectively to do some redevelopment. But I don't think it'll be nearly on the same scale as redevelopment in terms of impact and fighting blight issues.
Well, I am an eternal optimist, but I have to say it seems like the consequences for affordable housing here are pretty severe. Rents went up in San Francisco and San Jose by more than 10% just last month, so we continue to have a huge need for affordable housing. Historically, it's been virtually impossible for most communities to meet their low-income housing needs without some sort of subsidy source. Is there a plan for a replacement at the local or state levels?
Boy, do I wish I had a better answer for this question.
Yeah, you thought I had a billion-dollar question before.
This is the multi-billion one.
Okay.
You know, as you point out, the need is certainly very great here in California still, despite the perception that there's a lot of foreclosed units that are available. They're actually not available to folks that are in need, and they don't qualify to purchase those homes. There have been funding cutbacks at both the state and federal level, so the loss of redevelopment agency housing funds at this particular time is very, very difficult. I've not heard of any replacement sources at the state level. I've heard a lot of talk, both from administration officials, from affordable housing advocates, and even from some legislative leaders about plans to reinstate affordable housing at some level by maybe coming up with what's called a permanent source of affordable housing funding. But I've heard of no definite program at this moment. And I'm really hopeful something will develop shortly. But at the moment, it's pretty grim.
Well, we appreciate all your insights, although you didn't cheer me up. I'm not going to say you cheered me up.
I'm so sorry, Dave.
We focused on this issue before, by the way, and listeners interested in some of the history on all of this can access previous episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast at edenhousing.org. What about good information on the Steinberg Bill, SB 654? Can that be found on your site?
Probably the best site to go to would be Senator Steinberg's homepage at www.senate.ca.gov, or affordable housing advocacy groups such as NPH or Housing California are carrying information with regard to that on their websites. And I think you could just Google those names and get to their website pretty easily.
And we will try to post links to make that even easier. Lynn Hutchins of Goldfarb and Lipman, thanks so much for joining us today.
And thank you again for having me. I appreciate it.
You're so very welcome. I'm Joanne Green for Eden Housing. You can find more information at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.